Yeah, well, good evening, Cabal. You're listening to Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook, and a fond farewell to the late, great Mr. Bob Fast, who's broadcast himself into the ether tonight. Tonight we have two very special guests. First of all, Bob Lord will be talking about his new record, and then the great Sarah No H. Stay tuned. Yeah, kids, Bob Lord coming up here. He's original bassist, co-founder of Dreadnought, and we're going to be dipping into a bit of his album, Playland Arcade, and then speaking to him about it. And make sure you stay tuned live for Sarah No H playing live at 8. But meanwhile, here's a little something brand new from Bob Lord right here on WUSB Stony Brook. We're listening to Bob Lord's new record, Playground Arcade. We should be on the air with Bob in just a few moments, so stay tuned. Right, we've been listening to Playground Arcade right here on WUSB Stony Brook, and we are by Bob Lord, and Bob Lord, of course, a man of vast experience, a guy who, shall we say, is the Smith of Portsmouth. That's really bad. Musical Smith of Portsmouth. That's a bad joke. And his musical diversity, everything else is incredible, and the people he's worked with have been incredible. And we are lucky enough right now to have Bob on the air with us, I believe. Bob, can you hear us?
I can. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. It's been a joy listening to this new record of yours. And we've just been talking about the diversity of it and all the different things. It's all over the map, and it's still cohesive sound. It's great. So congratulations, and today is your release day, right?
It is. Thank you very much. I'm glad you've had a good time listening to it, and I have to say it's a nice feeling to know that it's kind of out there in the world and people are hearing it. It's been stuck in my head for so long. It's good to get it out.
So let's start actually in now, and then we'll go back a little bit as much as we can, because you have a vast vast back, so to speak. And
yeah.
This particular record, this particular release, were you bogged down by the virus situation slowing the process of this whole thing up? Or was this something that was done beforehand, or it's been in your head and not recorded, or all recorded, or what?
Well, everything has been bogged down by the virus. As a producer, as a performer, as a composer, obviously everything, we've had to find workarounds across the board in every facet of my career, for sure. But this began as a production a couple of years back, so it's been gestating for a while. I definitely did decide once the pandemic became clear that, you know, it was going to cause some cycles to be lost, that I think I felt I should wait a little bit until my own head was cleared to make sure that I could devote the proper attention to it. But, you know, music isn't like wine. It doesn't get better by sitting around. And I decided this spring would be a great time to get it out. And it's been germinating in my head for a long time. And all these different sounds and styles I knew I wanted to incorporate. There aren't a lot of prog rock bass playing, classical, experimental music composing CEOs out there. So I figured it was a good time to put it all together. Because, you know, my day job is music. My hobby is music. My life is music. It's all there. So, and I think you can hear it all on the record.
Yeah, and you really can. You have everything that ranges from your prog stuff, prog styled stuff to hey, there's some lounge music on there. So, you know,
there is.
I know. Yeah. It's everywhere. So it's all over the map. It's great. Let's talk about who you were working with on this record and how it got done. Obviously you have your own label called Parma and many other outlets, but what about recording this? Did you guys record together? Did you send tracks? How did it work out?
Great. Yeah. Thanks for the question. You know, Parma is my quote unquote day job, and with mm-hmm. the company I've executive produced over, I think, close to now, I think 1,000 records, maybe even over. But I made a very deliberate decision to not involve, you know, my own kind of company's resources in this project. This is my project, and I wanted to do something different from the band that I've been in for 25 years, still in, and we have a record coming out this summer as well. It's our 25th birthday. But I figured, you know, something different would be nice. And I have a wonderful collaborator for about a decade now. His name is John Wyman. He's a brilliant engineer and producer. And we've just worked together really closely for a number of years on a ton of different projects. And I knew I wanted to collaborate with John on this. And there are two other really key people in the process. One is my longtime two-decade friend, Duncan Watt. Folks might know Duncan as being the composer for the League of Legends video game from way back when. He's also the voice of a few of the characters. And he does a ton of work in that market. And also my other really good friend for a couple decades, the drummer Jamie Perkins, who's plays in a band called The Pretty Reckless. And they've just had a tremendous amount of success over the last 10 years or so, culminating this year in a release of their new album, which has just hit the top of a bunch of different Billboard charts. They've been at number one a couple times this year already. So it's really great to have this like stellar all-star team playing this music. And the best part for me was to be able to say to all those guys, plus all my other collaborators, the Moravian Philharmonic Orchestra, my buddy Ed Jurdy from the band of Heathens, to be able to say, hey, listen, you know, you guys, you just do as you wish. Sure, the ideas are mine, but I'm going to give you some agency to just go hog wild. And as a producer, I think it's a fun thing to do. And as a performer and a player myself, there's nothing better than when the producer says, hey, man, just go be you. So it's a real combination of, you know, a lot of my ideas for sure, of course, but a lot of collaboration from my pals as well.
Yeah, and it does seem like a very a seamless thing, and like nothing is work per se. Do you know what I mean? And that's hard to do with the kind of music you do.
It really is, and I think, listen, you can probably hear it in my voice right now. I smile when I talk. I smile when I think. I want to have fun. I want to laugh, and I think I'm always looking to make music for listeners who are like me, people who like to be surprised, like to be a little bit disoriented, who like to find some kind of pattern in the chaos, and that's the fun part of music for me. So the music I make and the music I like to listen to, I try and make them one and the same, and I think when you look at the whole record, which really is basically a love letter or a soundtrack to the beachside boardwalk town that I live in and have been visiting since I was a little kid. I live here now, on the seacoast of New Hampshire. The running theme really is just kind of walk along the boardwalk and what you experience and all those sights, the sounds, the scents. And when look through that lens at this record, I think you can really kind of, you can thread the needle through all the buttons and say, yeah, there's the theme songs, the lounge music, the video game tunes, all the crazy experimental stuff, weird happenings which occur in the context of the record that aren't necessarily music at all. That was the idea, was to be sure that I'm giving people as much fun in their listening as I had in making it.
And that's interesting. You mentioned the boardwalk or a city street or anywhere. It's the things you are. It's the paying attention to the changes going by you in a fun way.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was doing an interview the other day where I was explaining kind of part of my process. And obviously, pre-pandemic times, I'm on the road just all the time for making music production all over the world. And it's the input of all those different cultures, you know, I mean, going to China, going to Cuba, Czech Republic, Croatia, all these wonderful places where I get to work. All of those inputs, wow, it gives you a ton of inspiration. It's sometimes just those little things you hear, the patterns, the sound, the smell, something that triggers something in you and makes you go, ooh, that's a good idea. And definitely in my town, in this area, this wonderful boardwalk, this beautiful beach, there's a lot to do down there. And this past year, this past summer, was the first summer I can ever remember not going there because of the pandemic. Mm. Because the Playland Arcade, the place where I go to play skee ball and Galaga and stuff, it was shut down. So I'm anxious to get back there this summer. It's going to happen.
Yeah, it is going to happen. It is going to happen. How have you, obviously your work is one thing and the fact that you enjoy playing live, but how has it affected you being home this whole time affected you? I mean, I know you miss things, but has being home had any kind of effect you want to discuss?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I think as an artist, as a creator, there's a couple different ways to approach things. Well, there's a lot of different ways to approach things, but there's a couple different ways that I tend to react. When someone comes up to me and says, here's a giant canvas, all blank, and here's 1,000 colors of paint, go paint your masterpiece. Well, that's kind of tough, right? I mean, that's a blue sky, green field, and you got a lot of decisions to make. But when someone comes along and says, I need a 7-second piece of music, and it's got to be in the key of A major, and I'd like it to be 120 beats a minute, right? I mean, you know, when there are constraints placed upon your circumstances, your decision sets become a lot easier. Your prioritization becomes a lot easier. And in fact, I find it becomes a lot easier to become creative. Mm-hmm. So a part of this whole pandemic, I think, for artists like me has been being forced to adapt to these circumstances and to be creative within these confines. And you know, maybe I'm making lemonade out of lemons here, but I think that can be a very good thing and a very enlightening thing. I am anxious to have my giant canvas and all my colors and all my toys again. But that being said, I think it's been a really productive thing for not only me, but for my company as well. We have more than 36 folks in 4 countries worldwide making music all the time, producing, you know, recording, doing all the stuff. And we were able to really power through the whole pandemic so far in a really productive and good and safe way. So it's been a challenge, but I think a creatively energizing one for me. And I know I feel like a coiled spring, right? Just I'm ready to go.
That's great. So you're keeping sharp is the bottom line at the same time while you're hanging at home.
Absolutely, yeah. And there is no rest for me, because with staff in Europe, I'm up at all hours. I'm ready to go just about any time, as you know from calling me right now.
Right. So, yeah, let's talk a little about that, because I was going through some of the Parma catalog, which is I knew of records on Parma, but I never knew the vastness of the catalog. And it's really amazing. You know, how did you get involved? This how did Parma get started specifically?
Well, you know, Parma was an outgrowth of a couple different experiences I had. I think first was kind of achieving a version of that big brass ring that every artist of my age bracket kind of went for. I'm in my mid 40s, about to turn 45, and mm-hmm. I grew up kind of straddling this this digital era. So I learned how to type in a typewriter. I learned, you know, I mean, there was no internet, no cell phones when I was graduating high school and going into college. I was stapling posters on telephone poles, and you know, the hunt was on for the record deal, but we just didn't realize that we came kind of when that all ended. And mm-hmm. so my band Dreadnought, the band celebrating our 25th, when we finally got signed to a record deal, a small one, a modest one, for an album, I realized that the thing I'd been searching for so long was, in fact, a form of control that I didn't like. I had been searching for my artistic freedom. I thought that someone was saying to me, I want you to be the you that you want to be, like I said a few moments ago about like what you dream of hearing from a producer. But that wasn't what I was hearing, or wasn't what I was being told, actually. What I was being told was, you know, could you change your vision a little bit to be sure that we can sell more records? And it wasn't a big thing. It wasn't a major deal, like nothing crazy. But it was enough to make me realize if I keep going down that path, I'm not going to like it. And then I had a second experience, which was producing the great clarinet player Richard Stoltzman, Grammy winner, mm-hmm. one of the great classical musicians of our time. Being in studio with him many, many times, making a ton of records with him. Well, I think one of the first or second times I was making a record with him, I realized, you know, it was like trying to herd cats. I had to talk to his personal assistant to make sure the engineer was there, to make sure that the manager was informed, the label was all set, the the publicist knew what was going on. I had to make sure I had lunch brought at the right time. And, oh, my God, where is the page turner, right?
Right.
All these different things. Oh, and, oh, by the way, I got to produce the session. I got to make sure all the notes are right and everything is perfect. And I realized there's got to be a better way. And kind of in those two combinations of experiences, I realized what I always wanted for myself was something I could potentially create for other people, which is the ability to have all the control and none of the responsibility, right? to be able to do what you want to do and have other people basically do the dirty work. And that's where Parma comes in, is that essentially I had this idea for a shop to be able to handle all aspects of the musical production process, from kind of conceiving of it to executing it to bringing it to market and beyond. And it took me, it's taken me now 13 years to really build it out to the extent that I really wanted to. And it's now grown to a degree that I don't think any of us had foreseen at the very beginning. So it's super exciting. We make a ton of records, classical music, jazz, world music, and we do all kinds of really cool projects. And we've made records of people like Pete Townsend, Dan Brown, the author of The Da Vinci Code, the London Symphony Orchestra, just stuff that you kind of pinch yourself at a certain point and say, hey, that's really cool. I got to do that. So while my dreams as a rock and roll youth maybe didn't come true the way I thought they might have, they really did come true in the end, because, you know, Pete Townsend, The Who, John Entwistle, these are the guys that inspired me to do this in the first place. And to get to work with them and play with them as I have, it's really been a dream come true.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And it's actually, you found a way to maintain that specific dream by maintaining yourself, and that's how you've done it. It's fantastic.
I think a lot of folks, when they're young, when they're first getting going in this industry, they're not told that there are many, many, many ways to make a really fun living and a meaningful living and have a wonderful career and to make an impact. It's not just, you know, one or two different ways to get through this. The key is to simply be open to all these different experiences and understand that you know, life is about finding all these different balances, and both in yourself personally and professionally, making sure that those things are in harmony. And if the harmony is that they're dissonant, well, that's fine too, right? Like, it's just a matter of knowing what it's all about. And I'm lucky enough to have been able to find a way through, and with really great staff and really great band and really great collaborators and a great support network, we've managed to do something I think it's been very, very hard for a lot of folks to do, and we're having a great time doing it.
That's fantastic. So you just mentioned a few of your idols you got to work with. When you were a kid, let's say, in high school, what were you listening to?
Well, I started playing when I was about 12 years old and picked up the bass because I heard The Who play. I'd been musical before that, been, you know, making sounds, and I was certainly artistic, drawing and reading and writing stuff, but it was when I heard The Who, I said, that's what I want to do with the rest of my life. And I picked up that bass, and I never looked back. I heard John Entwistle play and heard Pete Townsend play and just was totally inspired. You know, I was listening to, in high school, I had bands. I was playing in hardcore bands, alternative rock bands. I had a, like, you know, dozen-piece soul band with my buddy Ed Jurdy that I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Stax, Motown, all kinds of great tunes. And as I began to listen more and more, I got more attracted to stuff like Rush, King Crimson, Yes. Then getting into jazz and kind of getting through the kind of core stuff and going a little bit deeper into some weirder pockets of the repertoire. And then so by the time I heard classical music, not the kind of classical that I've become familiar with from Bugs Bunny and, you know, Kill the Rabbit, and not the kind of jazz that I heard on Mr. Rogers, but this other stuff, right? You know, and when I heard Stravinsky and music of this nature, Aaron Copland for the first time, I went, oh my God, now that's really what I want to do. So it was this really strange experience of kind of just following my ear the whole time. Didn't go to conservatory, my parents didn't stand over me with a ruler wrapping my knuckles because my hand position wasn't right for the Bach and the piano, you know? So it was a really cool experience of just kind of organic growth, which I think is mirrored in the experience of what you hear musically on the record, which I think is very much an outgrowth of all these different influences I just kind of just named, but also in my company as well, where it was this kind of, organic development of the organization bit by bit. And then, you know, long story short, we actually got the chance, my band Dreadnought, we got the chance to play with John Entwistle. We opened up for him in the year 2001. It was one of the very last shows he played right before he died. Mm. And that was one of those wonderful moments when you're just sitting there saying, wow, you know, how did that happen?
Right.
And then many years later, getting to work with, to co-produce a record with Pete. again, a moment when you're kind of sitting there in front of this guy and you're talking, you're getting deep into music and art and everything, and you realize, you know, is this the 12-year-old me, or is this the me, you know? And the answer is, it's both, and that's the craziest part of it all.
Right, right. That's great. What a great experience. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All those experiences, and so many. I mean, you've worked with so many people, and you've played with so many people, and all these things. Now, in between all of that, we're talking about, like, when Dreadnought first started, right?
Yeah.
A lot of changes through Dreadnought 2, I would say. And were you guys all on the same page with all of that as you were going, or was it a push and pull like bands can be?
Totally a push and pull, but in a good way, right? So we started off as many kind of like college bands start. And I came to New Hampshire and called up my buddy who was going to school down here. I was going to school up in Vermont. My buddy Ed, who I've mentioned a couple times in this call. We played together in high school for many, many years, recorded together, and did all kinds of great stuff. And said, hey, how's it going? He's like, meh. And he said, how's it going with you? I said, meh. So we started to play together right away as soon as I moved down. And you know, we found some like-minded folks right away, and one of whom being the drummer, Rick Habib, who's, you know, one of the founding members of the band. And so we started playing, performing, recording right away, just like as kind of college bands do, and it worked. It clicked. Over the course of a couple of years, Ed moved on to other things, and we brought aboard a wonderful guitar player named Justin Walton, who, of course, is still in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of just got whittled down to the three of us when we all kind of realized, like, there was a certain kind of musical thing we were going for, this out there, experimental, Americana-laced, progressive rock thing. And the three of us said, no, you know, this was really working. So by the time we got around to 2001, or I should say more like 2000, when we began to record the album, The American Standard, the uh-huh. album that, you know, kind of made an impact
great
for
album.
Us. And so it was a cool record. And by the time we were doing that, the three of us are all on the same page, and it was just like a kamikaze situation. And from that point on, you know, we kind of hit the road, did some touring. And then after a number of years, we brought aboard a drummer named Tim Haney. Tim, tremendously talented guy, just an explosive drummer. And we did a couple of years with him, made some music and recorded some stuff with him as well, an album called Musica in Flagrante. And then kind of went, had a little bit of a lull, and we were really performing live mainly, not doing a ton of recording. And then I would say about 10 years ago, kind of a funny story, but at one point in our earlier history, we had put together a time capsule. We had some material that we had written, and we didn't get to really record properly. We said, let's just, you know, tape it before we forget it. And then Rick kind of left the band for a couple of years, and 10 years later, we find the cassette tape. We're like, hey, there's some pretty good stuff on there. And that kind of launched us into this second phase of our career, which started in, like I said, about 2011 or so. 2013, we put out an EP, 2015 an EP, 2017 a new full-length. And we've been pushing since then. So our new one is called Northern Burner, comes out this summer, 25th anniversary. Hard to believe all the time has gone by,
right?
But it's a really cool album, and I think you'll like it a lot.
Oh, it should be great.
Yeah,
but that's a funny thing to talk about the cassette. It's like the found past, as you just said, the time capsule, and it's funny how we look back at things, and like sometimes we say, you know, that was really good. That was nowhere near as bad as I thought. And you also say, well, I don't know about that one that we thought was so great, right?
I've certainly found a lot in both camps. I can tell you that much. It is wild, though. I got to say, like, having been doing this as long as I have since I was a little kid, I still have all the tapes that I made when I was a kid with all my buddies on my 4-track. I got everything I've ever done, every scrap of paper, everything. And you know, in going through my old files recently, I've found some stuff, scores of stuff, orchestra, crazy recordings. I mean, I don't even remember making some of this stuff. And mm-hmm. some of it I look at, like you just said, it's like, ooh, okay, I'll put that away. That doesn't need to ever be seen. Other things, it's, you know, you hear it or you look at it, you're like, wow, what was I even thinking at that point in time? And this is why, like, I was given some really great advice by a buddy of mine a long time ago, great jazz trumpet player. And this is back when Dreadnought was playing like 20 nights a month and touring the country and doing crazy stuff. And I was booking all the gigs. And my buddy said to me, he's like, listen, what you're doing is insane and amazing because, number one, to play that much and to book that many gigs while making completely non-commercial music, he goes, it's a feat. He said, but I blew a lot of great solos out in the road, and those solos are still out there somewhere. And his point was, you know, capture it, record it, make sure that you are memorializing all this stuff. And that's advice I give to instrumentalists, bands, performers of all types. As a producer, I say, you know, it's really important to mark those points in your career, because when you look back, when you're drawing back the line, it's really important to have that stuff there to follow. And, you know, looking back, I'm glad that I've recorded as much as I did, and I wish I had done more.
Well, you know, there's the, what's the line that the Minutemen used to say? They used to say, you know, that when apologizing for some of the quality of their early recording, you know, when Mike Watt would discuss it years later, he would say, well, they were just flyers to us to get people to the gigs. It's the only reason we put out music, you know? So,
yeah. Well, it's so fascinating how the functionality of making music, the functionality of gigging, it has changed and evolved over time so much, right? Oh, yeah. We've seen the decommoditization of music. So what was like an accidental item in one time is now a gem in another, or a discovered jewel, right? And we even see it now in terms of Spotify. When I realized and I recognize how frustrating it is for so many musicians, especially now, to not have a revenue mechanism. We don't have gigs. We can't sell T-shirts. We can't sell product. Right. No one has CD players anymore, right? But it's like, you know, Spotify, like everything else, it's a tool. And it's just a matter of how you use that tool and to what end. So the way I look at this stuff is nothing is in and of itself intrinsically anything. It's merely how you choose to use it at that particular time and in what context.
Hmm. Smart. Well, that's what it's got to be these days, right? It's flexibility with your approach, and you seem to be pulling that off. So we've been talking to, we're still going to be talking to Bob Lord, but Bob, let's just tell the listeners what's your recommended way for them to get this album that was just released today, Playland Arcade?
Yeah, well, you can find me at boblordmusic.com, B-O-B-L-O-R-D. The album Playland Arcade is on Spotify, Bandcamp, Apple, YouTube, all the kind of major digital services. No physical product. Mm-hmm. I'm keeping it in the ether. But if you go to any of those sites and you type in Bob Lord Playland Arcade, you can find them. Whatever your poison is, I suggest you take it, because I think you'll like the record.
And you can also go to Bob Lord Music, the Bandcamp page, and do some downloads directly from there. I always feel that the more scratch, no matter how much the difference is, the more scratch in the artist's pocket, the better.
Totally agree. Thank you.
You know, so what's next? Obviously, we're all hoping we're going to be playing soon, right? Everybody. What's next as far as recording? I mean, you have a gargantuan plate. Well, wait, there's something I wanted to bring up. These Croatian bands, these crazy bands from all over the world. Let's talk about how you got involved with them.
Oh, man, you know, it's been so wild just working in all these different territories, like working down in Cuba, for example, meeting all these fantastic musicians who are just, you know, of ungodly talent levels, and being able to work in all these different venues all over the world and to really go where there's a particular sound to chase something. I found a really great situation in Croatia. It's a wonderful country. I have a ton of great friends there. And we've been doing a lot of recording in the country and collaborating with the musicians there, as we have in other countries, like I mentioned before, China, Czech Republic, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I had one really great experience this past fall in Croatia, which ties into something I'm doing upcoming. But we released an album, I produced it, the music for an album and a project called Wild Symphony by Dan Brown, the Da Vinci Code writer. Mm-hmm. It's a suite for orchestra. It's for children. It's a children's illustrated book. And we had a tour. We had like a 40-something date tour in 20-something countries planned before the pandemic hit. And of course, all those plans had to change. But we still managed to pull off the world premiere in Croatia in October. And it was one of the very last concerts, actually I think it was the second to last concert produced in the entire country before a huge lockdown went down. So I'm so happy that we got to get that in, broadcast on Facebook. It's a great record, Wild Symphony. People should check it out. For any parents out there, it's a kind of great alternative to all those wonderful records that we heard as kids to kind of introduce us to the style. And we have a few more concerts coming up this year for Wild Symphony. So I'm headed overseas in a couple months to the Czech Republic for the Czech premiere. Mm. We've got a few more concerts in the fall. And we have right now, my company Parma has recording sessions going on in multiple countries simultaneously. So starting up next week, we've got like a month of recording in Bulgaria at the same time we're recording in Boston and at the same time recording in the Czech Republic. So, I mean, it's madness, right? But it's a great madness. And I still can't believe that this rock and roll bass playing kid has ended up doing all the stuff I just told you about right there. So.
Yeah, the Croatian video, I saw a little of the performance of that on YouTube. Yeah. So it was that's why I brought up Croatia specifically. And it's pretty cool stuff you're doing. And once again, doing things at all types of genres, all over the map, and encouraging the production of all of that in your own company. And that's another rare case, you know, that diversity within a company. A lot of times companies, as you know, stick in a niche. That's what they do. That's that stylistically. But you're all over the map, and I think that's your great, great strength.
I really appreciate that. And, you know, look, my personal philosophy is to lower all the barriers to entry. You know, no one should feel weird about it, listening or encountering any kind of art. No one should ever be self-conscious about it. And I think the more open you are to experience, the more educated you're going to be, the better you're going to be able to enjoy everything and anything. And it's really weird, man. Like, growing up, I was a kid. I remember hearing Fleetwood Mac on the radio and just retching. I remember listening to Billy Dan while my mother would shop at Marshall's and TJ Maxx. And, like, I couldn't even stand the sound of it. Now I listen to those records and I pick them apart because the production is just so unbelievably beautiful. Oh, yeah. So, you know, all these things that you perceive when you were younger, it just all melts away the more you listen. So I just encourage everybody to, like, not get caught up in any genre boundaries. When you hear the word classical, don't be afraid. Don't think it's some stuck-up, you know, powdered wig kind of stuff, because, as you know, it is such a diverse field, such an amazing field. And that goes for everything, every style of music, you know. And I think this is the great benefit for the digital age, is our ability to not have to hunt through, you know, record bins in church sales, which I miss, don't get me wrong. I love that hunt. But wow, the access of being able to find anything you want at any moment and say, you know what, I've never heard this before, and I'm going to give it a shot.
And then let it lead you in a direction. So that's even more spectacular, you know, because you never know where all this stuff is going to take you. It's all music, as a friend of mine used to say to me, you know?
It's all music from the same bone, as Eric Burdon would say. And you're right. That exact process is what led to what you are hearing on Playland Arcade. It's just that whimsical following of, wow, what if I tried this and what's that sound like? And I'm really, really grateful for all the wonderful music I've been exposed to as a result of my passion, my job, my work, everything. It's been a privilege.
Yeah. We've been talking to Bob Lord of Dreadnought, and we're talking about his new solo record and his many projects, which we would need, I'd have to dedicate my show to every single week to cover. And the new record is called Playland Arcade, and it's a wonderful thing, just officially released today. I urge you to go to Bob Lord Music Bandcamp or BobLordMusic.com and check it all out and see what you like. And if you like what you hear, get it, you know, and pay the artist, you know. It's always a good thing. And highly recommend it. Bob Lord, it's been a pleasure to talk to you on Finn's Revolution. This will be up tomorrow night on our podcast. I will send you the link. And this way, everyone can hear it forever. Okay?
Super. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate being a guest. And I hope you enjoy the music.
Bob, thanks a lot. This is Tenderly from Bob Lord right here, WUSB, Stony Brook. Yeah, of course, Thelonious Monk right here. Don't blame me. And that's what I always tell you every week. Hey, you know, just a quick note on, I don't know, it really struck me when Mr. Bob Fass passed away. I think this last week, famous, legendary, not so much famous in certain circles, but legendary voice of broadcast and one of the founders of kind of a free-form radio that really wouldn't take full hold for a few years after he invented it back in the day on WOR, but mainly on WBAI, where it could be interviews, it could be him playing records backwards, it would lead anywhere he wanted it to. And he's kind of our, whether all of us know it or not, he's kind of our forefather in this particular gig of DJing freeform. You know, one week we're interviewing people, the next week we're playing live music, the next week we are chatting with you. And whatever the case may be, I just want to say, you know, Bob Fass is a force missed. And we got a chance to interview him a few times over the years, and I think three times. And I think I'm going to put together a little montage next week. But right now, here's the other thing. Vaccinations, kids, go get them. What's stopping you? What are you afraid of? That's what I want to know. Nothing. There's nothing to be afraid of. Man up. Sorry, ladies, but man up. Go get the shot, you know? Don't tell any stories. You know, no one's injecting you with something to trace you. You carry a phone, everyone's tracing you. You know, there's no secret to any of that. So just do the right thing and help humanity. And get us free of this virus as soon as is possible. And the way we do that is by creating this herd immunity. And the way we do that is not by getting each other sick and killing each other. It's by wearing a mask and preventing disease, number one. And number two, get a vaccination. Just get it. It's simple to do. Go online, make an appointment, depending on where you live. There's lots of walk-ins now. You can just go get a vaccination, like in New York City, where I live. Just do it for the good of humanity, my friends, the good of humanity.